Please turn with me to the letter to the Colossians, chapter 4. Closing salutations, and yet there's plenty there from which we can learn. Colossians chapter 4, final greetings from verse 7. Tychicus, a beloved brother, faithful minister, and fellow servant in the Lord, will tell you all the news about me. I am sending him to you for this very purpose, that he may know your circumstances and comfort your hearts. With Onesimus, a faithful and beloved brother who is one of you, they will make known to you all things which are happening here. Aristarchus, my fellow prisoner, greets you. With Mark, the cousin of Barnabas, about whom you received instructions, if he comes to you, welcome him. And Yeshua, who is called Justice, these are my only fellow workers for the kingdom of God who are of the circumcision. They have proved to be a comfort to me. As I looked at this last section, I realized that what we have here is a portrait gallery, and I would like to share this portrait gallery with you. There are 10 people mentioned in the final greetings and in the closing exhortations and blessing, and every one of them has a story to tell. And as we look at this portrait gallery, we are aware that God has put them up before our face as a mirror in which we can see ourselves. Do I correspond with this? Is this a close picture of me? Or do I approximate to this? This is the question we ask ourselves. First of all, he says to the believers, Tychicus, verse 7, a beloved brother, faithful minister, and fellow servant in the Lord will tell you all the news about me. Who was Tychicus? Tychicus is number one in the list. Tychicus was a disciple, and Shaul says here, he will tell you everything concerning me. It's like Joseph sending his brothers back to his father and saying, tell my father all about me in Egypt. It wasn't Epaphras. Epaphras was the one that was their minister. Remember, in chapter 1, he says in verse 7, you also learn from Epaphras, our dear fellow servant, who is a faithful minister of Messiah on your behalf. It wasn't Epaphras that Shaul was sending back. It was Tychicus. And the reason might be because he was in prison. He speaks of him as my fellow prisoner when he writes to his friend Philemon. If you look at Philemon chapter, there's only one chapter, Philemon verse 23. Epaphras, my fellow prisoner in Messiah Yeshua, greets you, as do Mark, Aristarchus, Demas, Luke, my fellow laborers. So that's why he would not be able to send them back the one that had come to him in the first place with news about them, with news about the threat that was posed against them. And he doesn't send Timothy either. Timothy, he writes in chapter 1 and verse 1, Paul, an apostle of Yeshua HaMashiach, by the will of God, and Timothy, our brother. Well, Timothy had other duties. Particularly, he had to look after the Kehillah in Ephesus. And he sends Tychicus, and he says, he will tell you all the news about me. He will make known to the glory of God what is happening to me here. How does he describe Tychicus? A beloved brother, faithful minister, fellow servant in the Lord. Now those are three great titles. These are great things to say about anybody. And it is the definite article that's used. The beloved brother. That is, beloved in the Lord. He calls him also, not only the beloved brother, one that was known to them, but also faithful minister. And again, we must point out that the word minister is the word for deacon. We have to say this because today the word minister has become an exalted title. Someone who's up on a pedestal. Someone who's above the rest. Someone who's in an ivory tower. And I'm afraid ministers have been guilty in promoting that conception. We must get rid of it. A minister is a servant. He is one that God has appointed to serve his people. The word used is deacon. In second book of Samuel, chapter 18, and in verse 27, we hear about another one who was a good servant. This was the messenger that ran to tell David about his great victory, his army's great victory against Absalom's rebellion. 2 Samuel 18 and verse 27. So the watchman said, I think the running of the first is like the running of Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok. And the king said, he is a good man and comes with good news. Now Tychicus was going with news to these believers in Colossae. He had to make that long and difficult journey right from Rome to Asia, to the city of Colossae. He was the beloved brother, faithful minister, in other words, a faithful servant of God and servant of the saints. And thirdly, he says, not only fellow servant in the Lord, faithful minister, but fellow servant in the Lord. That is, he was a co-laborer with Paul, with Epaphras, with Timothy, and with the others, a fellow servant. In chapter 1 and verse 7, we already read this, Epaphras is described there as our dear fellow servant, who is a faithful minister, the word deacon, a faithful minister of Messiah on your behalf. Our dear fellow servant. That is quite a title to bestow upon anyone by the apostle. And he's described here as a disciple serving in God's cause. What was Tychicus' main responsibility? When we follow him through the scriptures, he was a courier. He was a spiritual courier. That was the major task that he undertook. What a valuable thing it was in a day when there was no email, no newspapers, no TV, no radio. Traveling hundreds of miles, sometimes well over 1,000 miles, as a courier. Some people think, oh, that's a pretty small job. Well, let's take a lesson from the tabernacle. When God told Moses to build the tabernacle, he said it has to have boards. And those boards must be connected by bars. They must stand on silver sockets. The boards must be covered with gold. There must be a beautiful covering of pure linen over the top of this thing, of this structure. There are to be two sections, the holy place and the most holy place. And then around this structure there was a courtyard. And there were to be 100 pillars all the way around that courtyard. How did the pillars stand up? Oh, they had pegs and they had cords and they had hooks. Hooks on the pillars by which they were connected to each other and from which ropes, guy ropes you call them, were led out to the tent pegs that were hammered into the ground. Every pin was important. If a pin had been missing, a pillar would have leaned a little bit. It wouldn't have been straight vertical. So the hooks, the cords, the pins, as well as the boards and the pillars and the silver sockets, all were important and nothing could be missing. To bring that home to us, let's look at Isaiah chapter 33. Isaiah chapter 33. And the reason why I say that is there is no job that is too small for God's children to undertake. Everything is important. In Isaiah chapter 33, the Lord says, verse 20, about heavenly Zion, "Look upon Zion, the city of our appointed feasts. Your eyes will see Jerusalem, a quiet home, a tabernacle that will not be taken down. Not one of its stakes will ever be removed, nor will any of its cords be broken." Every one of those stakes, every one of those cords, every one of those hooks was important. Never think, "Oh, I've got such a small job, nobody's going to notice." One of the symphonies of Beethoven has one part where you hear the shriek of the storm. And the shriek of the storm is represented by the piccolo, a little whistle. And that man with the piccolo has to wait throughout the whole symphony just to play a couple of bars of this whistle. A great conductor was conducting a rehearsal, and the piccolo player thought, "Nobody's going to miss me in all the clash of those instruments representing the storm at its height." He did not blow his piccolo. The conductor stopped the whole orchestra. He said, "Where's the piccolo?" You know what piccolo means? Little. Do you feel you're small and despised and unnoticed? It doesn't matter. The hymn says, "Men heed thee, love thee, praise thee not. The Master praises, what are men?" It doesn't matter. We do things not for the notice of men. Servants were told, do not do your work with eye service as men pleasers. No, you do it with eye service as God pleasers. In other words, not to draw the eyes of men, but to draw the eyes of God. So that He looks. "Thou God seest me." That's the motto of the child of God. "I do everything in the sight of my God who loved me and who sent His Son to die for me. I do it all for His notice. It doesn't bother me if nobody else notices." That's the thought here. So Tychicus, everything was needed. Tychicus was an invaluable person. Can you imagine Paul saying, "I've got a very important letter. Timothy, you can't go. You've got to be at Ephesus. Epaphras, I wish I could send you, but you're in jail with me." So he goes around the list. "Ah, of course, Tychicus. He's done it so many times. He's never failed. Tychicus, you're the one to take this letter." And so he says in verse 8, "I am sending him to you for this very purpose, that he may know your circumstances and comfort your hearts. A messenger traveling long and far and to many people, to many believers." They hung on Titus's visits. How else were they going to keep in touch with one another? Last week we had a conference in Calgary, the Messianic Jewish Alliance of Canada. We strung out these alliances. Montreal, Toronto, there's not one in Winnipeg yet, there's one in Calgary and Vancouver. We're strung out. How are we to keep in touch with one another? It's by written messages in some form or another, or now by telephone as well. In those days, it was by messages, letters that were carried, and someone had to volunteer for the task. And it meant they would be weeks or months on their journey. A messenger. There seems to be a hint about Tychicus if we turn back to the second letter to Corinthians, chapter 8. Second letter to the Corinthians, chapter 8. Shaul is writing to the Corinthians and he says, I'm going to be sending your offering to Jerusalem, and I've got just the person to accompany the messengers. 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 16. But thanks be to God who puts the same earnest care for you into the heart of Titus, for he not only accepted the exhortation, but being more diligent, he went to you of his own accord. And, here it is, we have sent with him the brother whose praise is in the gospel throughout all the churches. Now, I suggest that this may well have been Tychicus. We don't know. He's unnamed. If it's Tychicus, it's to his commendation that he didn't seek a big name. He just said, just call me the brother. What a wonderful spirit. What a great attitude. He wasn't after this personality cult. And then in verse 22 again, and we have sent with them our brother, whom we have often proved diligent in many things, but now much more diligent because of the great confidence which we have in you. Tychicus, I have sent him, he says. I am sending him to you for this very purpose. To whom was he sending Tychicus? Well, Tychicus couldn't make that journey every day. So he had to take in everybody en route. Here are some of the people that he touched, the people at Colossae. And then not many miles away from them, there's a city of Laodicea. And not many miles from Colossae was also the city of Hierapolis. There were also the Ephesians. He would pass through Ephesus, which was to the west of Colossae, on his way. And so he may have been the one who carried the letter to the Ephesians. And, of course, a letter to Shaul's friend Philemon, which I referred to a moment ago. In verse 13 and verse 16, speaks about Epaphras, for I bear him witness that he has a great zeal for you, and those who are in Laodicea, and those in Hierapolis. And then in verse 16, now when this epistle is read among you, see that it is read also in the church of the Laodiceans, and that you likewise read the epistle from Laodicea. This is the one he's sending. And you can see how he would be able to take in all those others on his way. And he says, for this very purpose, for mutual information that was vital for prayer. And what was another purpose? That he may know your circumstances and comfort your hearts. The book of Proverbs says, like cold waters to a thirsty soul, so is good news from a far country. Follow-up ministry is very vital to keep up the courage and the hope and the zeal of the saints. We need to be in touch with one another. So the Alliance has its Menorah magazine, where all the congregations which are associated with the Alliance or members of, no, they cannot be members, but associated with the Alliance. I say that, sorry, this is an aside. Membership in the Alliance is individual, not congregational. But there are people all across the country saying, have you heard what's been happening in our part of Canada? This is what Shaul was doing with Tychicus, that he may know your circumstances and comfort your hearts. Mutual encouragement, fellow feelings for each other, promoted by the exchange of news, and also sharing prayer needs with one another. That was Tychicus's responsibility. As the old English poet said, no man is an island. In Ephesians chapter 6, verse 21 and 22, the Apostle Paul says about Tychicus there to the Ephesians, and that's why we can take it that he did pass by Ephesus. Ephesians 6, verse 21 and 22, but that you also may know my affairs and how I am doing, Tychicus, a beloved brother and faithful minister in the Lord, the word is deacon, will make all things known to you, whom I have sent to you for this very purpose, that you may know our affairs and that he may comfort your hearts. Just occurred to me, what minister would take it kindly if you said, would you mind being our courier? I'm a minister. I don't stoop to such things. I've got more important things to do. Well, I'm afraid that's the attitude that's out there. And it's deplorable. Now, the next one he talks about, verse 9. Here's a man with a story. Verse 9, with Onesimus, a faithful and beloved brother who is one of you. Let's pause there. Who was Onesimus? We've already read Paul's letter to Philemon. Onesimus was a runaway slave of Philemon. This young slave chafed under his slavery. And finally, in the heat of the moment, he robbed his master and used the funds to get as far away from Philemon as possible. Philemon lived in the city of Colossae. Onesimus took off, and with his ill-gotten gains, he made his way to Rome, hoping to lose himself in the anonymity of that city. He may have heard about Paul from his master, because Paul and Philemon were very close friends. There's no one else in Shaul's letters whom he refers to in the affectionate way that he does to Philemon. Brother, he calls him, twice. Whatever, Onesimus found himself in the metropolis of Rome. Nobody, he thought, will find me here. But he was in for a surprise. He heard about this man, Paul, who had his own hired house and who received everybody who came to him. So he thought, I'd like to hear this man. So he crept in with other people. Nobody asked for names and addresses. Nobody asked them in those days to sign the guest book as we do today. So he was able to sit at the back and listen. And God got Onesimus. He came under conviction of sin. And he realized he was a terrible sinner. He needed to be saved. The wrath of God was upon him. Who could help him but this man, Paul the prisoner, as he was known in Rome. So one day he plucked up his courage and he went to Paul and he said, can you show me how I can be saved? What must I do to be saved? So the Shaul led him to the Lord. He speaks of him as his son, his child, has begotten in his bonds. But when a person becomes a believer, their conscience is very tender. They then think back, oh my goodness, what have I said? What have I done? I should be putting things right. That's what comes to the conscience of every new believer. What can I do to mend things, to make amends for my sinful past? And there's one thing that was the skeleton in the cupboard for Onesimus. But at last he brought it out. He brought it out to Shaul and he said, I have to say this. I am a runaway slave. My master is Philemon. He lives in the city of Colossae. Philemon, said Paul. Do you know Philemon? Yes, I do. Well, says Shaul, he is one of my dearest and my closest friends. What's the problem? Onesimus says, I have to go back. I have to make things right. I have to pay my master back what I stole, but I'm poor now. I couldn't possibly repay him. Then Shaul spoke up, said, Onesimus, you're quite right. You've got to go back. You've got to pay. As for being able to pay, don't give it a second thought. I'll underwrite all your costs. I'll pay the debt back. In fact, I'll write a letter. And you can take this letter back with you. Now he's writing to these people, and it's possible that with Tychicus went Onesimus. Can you imagine the meeting with Philemon? Philemon opens the door. Tychicus, my dear brother. Then he stops and he says, you back again. Onesimus standing there with his head hung. Then Tychicus speaks up for Onesimus and he says, Philemon, there's plenty to be said. Can we come in? Onesimus has a story all his own. So he comes in, and Philemon, after speaking with Tychicus, turns to Onesimus. Have you come back? Yes, master. Well, what brought you back? The best of reasons, master. I have met your friend Paul, and he has led me to the Messiah. And I'm back here to make reparations. I have a letter for you from him. So Onesimus picks out this letter, a short letter, just a little piece of parchment rolled up, scrolled up, and gives it to Philemon. You know what the name of Onesimus means? Useful. Will he be anything but useful to Philemon? He was a runaway slave. This is how Paul writes, if we turn to the letter to Philemon, verse 8. Therefore, though I might be very bold in Messiah to command you what is fitting, yet for love's sake I rather appeal to you, being such a one as Paul, the agent, and now also a prisoner of Yeshua HaMashiach, I appeal to you for my son Onesimus, whom I have begotten while in my chains, who once was unprofitable to you, but now is profitable to you and to me. I am sending him back. You therefore receive him, that is, my own heart, whom I wished to keep with me, that on your behalf he might minister to me in my chains for the gospel. But he goes on to say in verse 15, for perhaps he departed for a while for this purpose, that you might receive him forever, no longer as a slave, but more than a slave, a beloved brother, especially to me, but how much more to you, both in the flesh and in the Lord. Why did Shaul say no longer as a slave? He said, if you wish to employ him, that's fine, but you cannot, Philemon, you cannot in the light of the Torah take him back as a slave, because the Torah says in Deuteronomy 23, verse 15, you shall not deliver up the slave who has escaped to you back to his master. He shall live in freedom. The Torah says it. Philemon, God has commanded us, and we cannot, imagine that we are obeying God's law if we bring back our slaves into bondage again. That's why he said it. But in writing to the Colossians, he doesn't say all this. He just says, Onesimus, a faithful and beloved brother who is one of you. Faithful? They had all heard about Onesimus who had run away. Faithful? What does Paul mean, faithful? He doesn't tell them, he doesn't go into any details of Onesimus' defection and failings and the crime of robbing his master. That is only between him and Philemon. But for the public, for public consumption, the less he could say about Onesimus negatively, the better. In fact, he says nothing negative about Onesimus here. A faithful and beloved brother. Oh, that makes the difference. Onesimus has been saved. Let us rejoice. Messiah has found his sheep that was lost. It's not a faithful brother, but the faithful brother. He talks of him in the same breath as he talks of Tychicus. Tychicus, the faithful brother, or Onesimus can match him as far as faithfulness is concerned. The faithful brother. Brother, take him back now as one of you, one of the redeemed community. Not slave, not yet minister. He had gone with Tychicus, who was minister, deacon. But you see, he gave Onesimus a chance, first of all, to grow spiritually, to prove himself before he had that honorable responsibility of being called deacon. It is an honor to be called deacon. So he doesn't speak about it like that. But then in the letter to Philemon, in verse 13, he says, on your behalf I wished that I could have kept Onesimus, that he might minister to me in my chains for the gospel. No, he said, I don't want to do it when you have no opportunity to say yea or nay, because you're so far away. So I'm sending him back to you to straighten the record. What do you think Philemon did next? For love's sake, Onesimus, dear brother, welcome. If you wish to work for me, I will pay you as I would any other person, other employee. But you are a slave no longer. Messiah has not only got rid you of your slavery to sin, but Messiah has delivered you from physical slavery. Onesimus, useful. He had become useful now. And he says, he is one of you. He was a native of Colossae, like Epaphras. He was received back then as a fellow citizen. He was received back as a fellow believer. Then he says about Onesimus and Tychicus, still in verse 9, they will make known to you all things which are happening here. That is to say, they will exchange news with you and they will share matters for prayer and praise. You can believe it that they did not talk about Onesimus's colossal failure in the past. All was forgiven. And where God forgets, where God forgives, we forget, we forgive. We have to be sure of that, because we cannot bring up someone's past when they have repented. We would be displeasing God because he doesn't do it. And he says that we are to be like him. So much for Onesimus. Running away from God, running in the ways of sin, and then finding after all that our God intercepts us, like David says in Psalm 139, if I go to take to the wings and go to the uttermost part of the earth, you're there. If I go to heaven, you're there. If I go down to the grave, you're there. I cannot hide from you. I cannot flee from your spirit. Onesimus. Number 3, Aristarchus. Verse 10. Aristarchus, my fellow prisoner, greets you with Mark, the cousin of Barnabas, about whom you received instructions. If he comes to you, welcome him. Two more are mentioned here, Aristarchus and Mark. Aristarchus was a Hebrew believer with a Gentile name. He was a fellow traveler with Shaul. We read about him in Acts chapter 19 and Acts chapter 20. In Acts chapter 19, verse 29. So the whole city of Ephesus was filled with confusion and rushed into the theater with one accord, having seized Gaius and Aristarchus, Macedonians, Paul's travel companions. And then when Paul departed from Ephesus in chapter 20, and verse 4. And so Peter of Berea accompanied him to Asia, also Aristarchus and Secundus of the Thessalonians, and Gaius of Derbe and Timothy, and Tychicus and Trophimus of Asia. He was a fellow traveler with Paul. Later on, he refers to Aristarchus and he says, he is my fellow prisoner. Aristarchus was ready to go with Paul, even to shipwreck, even to prison. He was a tried and a true disciple. In Acts chapter 27, we read of him once more. Acts 27 verse 2. So entering a ship of Adramyttium, we put to sea, meaning to sail along the coasts of Asia. Aristarchus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica, was with us. Now, being so close to the Apostle Paul and so long with him, when Paul was slapped into jail, they said of Aristarchus, guilty by association, slapped him into jail too. But the thing about Aristarchus was, he was willing to pay the price of being identified with God's servant. For better, for worse, he stuck by his friend Paul. Aristarchus, a tried and true disciple, and he also sent greetings from prison to Shaul. He was a Hebrew, because verse 10 and 11 go together. Aristarchus, Mark, Jesus, who is called Justice, Shaul says in verse 11 about them, these are my only fellow workers for the kingdom of God who are of the circumcision. Only those three are Jewish believers. The rest of my people are all unbelievers. How precious were those handful of believers to Shaul, how few and far between they were. But we come back to verse 10. He mentions next Mark, the cousin of Barnabas, about whom he received instructions. If he comes to you, welcome him. Mark. We know all about Mark. Remember, it's only in the Gospel of Mark that we read about a young man with just a linen sheet around his naked body who followed the Lord when he had been arrested. The Lord Yeshua had been arrested in the Garden of Gethsemane. He was being led to the high priest's palace. And Mark puts in this note, which is not found anywhere else, about a certain young man who followed clothed with a sheet. Maybe it was a personal note, perhaps. But we read about this young man that the thugs laid hold on him, and in his terror, he left the sheet in their hands and fled away unclothed from them. Maybe that was Mark. We read further about Mark when Peter was delivered by the angel of the Lord in Acts chapter 12. Peter made his way to the house of John Mark's mother, where they were met for prayer. So we see there is Mark mentioned. Then we read about his failure. He also failed. He was like Onesimus in that respect. He failed the Lord. He was chosen to be minister, and again the word is deacon. He was chosen to serve Paul and Barnabas as they went on their first journey. They went first to Cyprus, and that was all right because he had family connections in Cyprus. But when they went over to Asia Minor, he deserted Paul and Barnabas when they needed him most and returned to Jerusalem. He defaulted. There's a young man who defaulted on his call. But now something has happened, and he's being restored. There's a big fight between Paul and Barnabas about Mark, because when they decided to go on another trip to go around the Kehilot that they had established, Paul said, let's take Silas. Barnabas said, no, let's take Mark. Give him another chance. Paul said, he didn't stand up to the pressure last time. I'm afraid he won't stand up to it now. Barnabas said, no, we've got to give him another chance. And in the end, the contentions were so sharp between them that they split up. Barnabas took Mark and went back to home territory, to Cyprus, in a way tacitly admitting that that's about all that Mark could handle. And Paul chose Silas. Just as well it wasn't Mark, because the next thing we read about them is they got a whipping and thrown into the jail in Philippi. And it was only a man like Silas who could stand up to some pressure like that. But now he's writing to the Colossians. Something has happened in the time in between. And he says, I'm sending you greetings. And one of these days he's going to come your way. And I don't want you to say, Mark, you failed Paul. You've got a count against you. You're in our black books. No, he says, receive him. You have received instructions. If he comes to you, welcome him. He was now more suited to the work that he was given. But it wasn't the pioneering work that Shaul and Barnabas and Silas had been used to. And there's a letter here, because there was still prejudice. You know how people talk? I'm afraid the proverb is very true that says, if you give a dog a bad name, you might as well hang him. But here, Shaul obviously has been reconciled to Mark, and he says, if he comes to you, receive him, accept him, recognize him. He has been of service to me. That's what he says to Timothy. He has been of service to me. Well, we've seen in God's portrait gallery, Tychicus. We've seen Onesimus. We've seen Aristarchus. We've seen Mark. And the rest, God willing, we'll have to do next week. But we see here these portraits that God has given us in his word that are like a mirror to us. Am I like that? Have I ever defaulted on an assignment that God gave me? Thank God that with God there is forgiveness, there's restoration, and we can have another chance to prove ourselves. That's what God did to Jonah, didn't he? When Jonah defaulted. That's what God did to Mark. If anyone here is discouraged because you feel you have failed the Lord, go back to him. Tell him, Lord, I repent. I have failed you. By your grace, I will never do it again. Give me another chance. Well, we have to leave it at that. May the Lord bless his word to our hearts and encourage us. God willing, we'll finish the letter next week. We have about 10 minutes for feedback. If any of you would like to ask a question or make a comment.